Chris Johnston, our senior writer for Sportsnet.ca and a contributor to headlines on Hockey Night in Canada. Chris, we had you on Tuesday with the big news of that day with Stevie Y stepping down. We got you on a Thursday when Eric Karlsson's traded. Good work lining this up for us. Thank you.
What are we going to talk about the rest of the season? I mean, this is quite a way to start out of the box.
They got to relocate Arizona next Tuesday to Houston to keep up. I'll say that.
Okay.
A little late probably for that. Thoughts today. Did you get the sense it was coming? We sort of saw some speculation this morning that things were heating up and that maybe the Senators were going to beat the start of training camp as a deadline to get it done.
Yeah, even going back to the weekend, it was pretty clear that Ottawa had made up its mind, if at all possible, that this was a deal they're going to make now. And then, you know, it took them a little longer, I think, actually, than they intended, with Eric showing up at the arena and, you know, being held back from reporters. And, you know, as all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed, that, you know, a bit of a complex trade with a bunch of conditions on it, you know, we're finally able to make the deal. And you know, look, it's a little bit like I would have expected, you know, had you asked me about it a month ago, in that it was a tough trade for Ottawa to feel too good about. You know, I think under the circumstances where they're giving up a guy who's won two Norris trophies still at a reasonable age of his career, but with only 1 year to free agency, I think that they did relatively well. Not great, but you know, I think it could have been worse, you know, which actually mirrors some of my thoughts on the Pacioretty deal. And you know, for them, it's a chance to turn the page right away and embark on this, you know, what will be a strange season. I think, you know, one where they know they're going to take their lumps. And you know, I've seen a lot of that today because, you know, Eric is, you know, I think without question the best player that's ever worn the Senators jersey. And you know, he's been there a long time and he wanted to stay. And, you know, that wasn't in the cards.
Can you compare this to the situation that Joe Sakic was in with Matt Duchene? Everyone knew he had to make a deal, just like everyone knew Pierre Dorion had to make a deal. Like there are subtle differences, a year and a half remaining in Duchene's deal versus 1 year in Karlsson. But it's when I measure, I keep hearing people say, oh, he's in a tough spot. What were you going to do? Well, that's what everyone said about Joe Sakic for a year. He screwed it up. What's he going to do? And he ends up winning that deal going away, and he might end up getting Jack Hughes out of the deal as well. Maybe that's the anomaly, but shouldn't we expect more? There have been GMs in tough spots that have done much better than Pierre Dorion did today.
Well, you know, where he screwed up, I think, then is not trading him at the deadline last year. And I held that view at that time. I mean, because at least when you're doing that, you're giving a team acquiring him a chance for two playoff runs with him at minimum, you know, in addition to handing them the chance to get him in the fold earlier and try to convince him to stick around. You know, when you're getting into the final season, it's tough. And you know, Eric and his agents had a chance in the summer to talk to a couple teams. They were given that right. And, you know, from my understanding, they didn't really have much interest in negotiating an extension at this time. You know, I think that, you know, he wants to see what might be out there for him, which, you know, certainly is his right under the CBA. But, you know, that was a challenge. I think they held on a little bit too long before making the difficult decision. And you know, that's what worked in Colorado's favor is Ottawa was compelled to take a big swing, you know, getting, you know, a full season plus three quarters of last year on his deal. You know, that hasn't worked out for them. It hasn't aged well. And I think it's kind of a mitigating factor in this because it's, you know, less than a year ago, they were going all in, so to speak, on trying to make a run. And now they're, you know, holding this fire sale. And have been doing so for the last few months. But you know, to me, that's where the error is with the benefit of hindsight. And you know, I think they have mismanaged the asset, but I don't know that it would have gotten better as it went along. And clearly they felt that this was going to be a distraction for them they didn't want to have.
No question. You could always make the argument you can get a bidding war mid-season when injuries occur or teams find themselves out that thought they were in, teams that thought they were, you know, a bubble team suddenly find themselves in contention, not unlike Vegas last year. I mean, you could make that argument, but you're right. You don't know. Plus, you inherit the risk of Karlsson himself either getting hurt or not showing well after that significant offseason surgery of a summer ago. I'd love to be able to grade Pierre Dorion on his work and give him a big fat F in permanent marker, but you can't help but wonder how much autonomy he has in Ottawa. How much was he impeded in this deal? I wouldn't have been surprised if you had told me Dorion wanted to trade him at the deadline last year, but he was not allowed to.
Well, I would agree with that. And, you know, I don't have any specific knowledge of that, but I'm very comfortable saying that, you know, any move that, that he makes has heavy, you know, the owner is a factor there. And you know, he's not the only general manager that has to deal with this. You know, there's various types of setups around the league. But, you know, in his case, it's a small front office, and Eugene Melnyk is involved on a near daily basis, you know, from what I've heard. And you know, it's not to say that he's pulling the strings on this trade, but he's certainly involved. You know, when you're trading a player of this caliber, I think ownership would always be involved. But, you know, I don't think that he has what we would call autonomy in these types of decisions. And specifically, I know, you know, from another team that that was out there involved in this talk, that they felt that Pierre Dorion wanted to make the deal without Bobby Ryan's contract, which is obviously what ended up happening, and that it was the owner, Eugene Melnyk, you know, going back to last year's deadline, that was trying to get that included in there, that, that they would be dumping a significant contract as part of trading Erik Karlsson. And, you know, if that's the case, it, you could see where that would be challenging as a GM. You're trying to make the best hockey deal you can make, and certainly strapping, you know, a terrible contract to you know, an otherworldly player is not a way to get the best value back.
I honestly thought this would be the kind of return if someone had to take the Bobby Ryan deal. It was not included. As I noted earlier, 4 times 7.25 left on that contract. They didn't get a core part back, at least a for sure core part back. That is stunning to me that they certainly got a lot of things, but is there a for sure amongst those things?
No, there's a lot of maybes. I think that's the best way to look at it. It's not to say that nothing will come of this, but, you know, draft picks, you know, it's speculative and even prospects. And, you know, they've gotten some decent prospects here, a recent first round pick. And you know, it's not nothing, but it's a bit of magic beans and hoping. And, you know, there's every possibility that, you know, 5 years from now, this looks, you know, a little bit like, say that the trade that sent Joe Thornton to San Jose originally, you know, in Boston got some players back, but they didn't really do anything of consequence. I mean, it's quite possible in a few years that none of these guys have made any lasting impact on the Senators, and then, you know, it's going to look even worse than it does today.
What does this do to the balance of power in the Pacific? I had entered September with the thought that there's probably one team that's out of it in the Pacific, and then a lot of question marks and a lot of, well, if this goes right or if this goes wrong. You could make a case for a lot of teams making the playoffs in the Pacific. I feel differently today. Does it? And even after Pacioretty earlier this week, has anything changed in your mind in the last few days?
Well, it's a much tougher looking division. It's an uphill slog. And I think what's interesting here to me, Ryan, is that, you know, all indications are that the San Jose Sharks aren't done. I mean, this is their, I won't call it final, because they have had a longer extended window than most teams, where they've been a, you know, pretty high end team near the top of the NHL, where, you know, most seasons you've thought certain things fell their way, they had a shot at it. But, you know, they've clearly doubled down here with, you know, trading for and signing Evander Kane, you know, late last season in the summer, now trading for Erik Karlsson. You know, they want more help down the middle, and you know, I think they have the cap space to get it done. It's going to take some creativity, but, you know, the fact that they're not done, and you know, I'm not sure Vegas is done. I mean, certainly the Golden Knights would have liked to have added Erik Karlsson. I think that they were a little bit more concerned about the possibility of making this deal and having him walk away. You know, the lack of certainty of what the future holds, that, you know, I think that they were a little less interested in the at least the possibility that they'd be giving up these assets for what would be a rental for a year. But, you know, this division is very strong. You know, I certainly, it didn't get any easier. And it's funny the way it is. We have a few divisions, you know, even the Atlantic with Karlsson going out of it, where you have some really high level teams, the Bruins, the Lightning, the Leafs, but now you have Ottawa and Montreal kind of, you know, mailing it in a little bit, going through rebuild. So I think it's sort of setting up that we're going to have a haves and haves nots league, maybe a little bit more than we've seen, where parity has kind of reigned the last few years.
I agree with your sentiments on both the Knights and the Sharks. The Sharks would love another center to play top 6 minutes right now. I don't know that they want Joe Pavelski down the middle versus, say, Logan Couture. And they've also shown, you know, a keenness for Hurdle on the wing rather than down the middle. And they're probably better off allowing Joe Thornton to be more of a specialist at age 39. Would you agree with those sentiments?
Yes, very much so. And, you know, you have to wonder, given the history here if Matt Duchene becomes one of their targets. And you know, I don't think that the Senators, in fact, I know the Senators at this point aren't writing off the possibility of extending Duchene themselves. But, you know, if time goes along and the number of conversations that must have happened with, you know, the Senators dealing Mike Hoffman earlier this offseason to the Sharks and, you know, having had talks on this Carlson trade going back several months, you know, they would be intimately familiar with all the pieces of the organization, be it prospects, future picks, and the like. And you know, perhaps Matt Duchene could be another Ottawa Senator that at some point finds his way to San Jose.
Wow. Maybe it's third time a charm for Pierre, hey? Who knows? let's move along to Tyler Seguin. $78.8 million. He kind of gets Wally pipped here. Maybe that's the wrong terminology. It was a bad news day if Tyler Seguin wanted a lot of people to talk about him today.
It was, but it was a great news day for his accountant and yes, the future of his family, I would say.
Yeah.
Because that contract in Texas in particular goes a little farther than it would in many other places in the league. And you know, for Tyler Seguin, on a personal level, I mean, he was pretty clear, you know, late summertime that he was surprised that not much had happened here. Hawks really picked up after that point. I think it got the attention of Stars management. And you know, since he's been back in Dallas the last 10 days or so, they've been hammering away at this. And he gets a front-loaded deal. He gets protection in the years that aren't likely to, you know, that are possible lockout years coming up here. And he gets paid as one of the top players in the league. And then, you know, I think it's a real prove-it year for him in some ways. I mean, certainly he's had a number, including last year, of seasons as a high-point producer. But, you know, the Stars have sort of fallen short of, I think, the sum of their parts in some ways. That's the view inside the organization. They shifted coaches now a couple times. And, you know, I think it's a big year in Dallas where Jim Neal didn't want to – this is a distraction. I don't think he wanted any part of, you know, having to potentially trade Tyler Seguin if he couldn't get him signed. So, you know, this is about market value. I think it's a fair contract. It's a big number, but he's produced among the league leaders for enough years now that he was going to get that in free agency. And, you know, the Stars are kind of all in their own way. I don't see them being in the same group as some of the teams we talked about earlier. I still think that they have a ways to go, and you know, you can add them to the list of teams that I'll be watching for to be aggressive this year in adding additional players, because I do think it's the kind of season where they have to take a clear step forward or people are going to lose their job.
Just looking, a week ago we chatted about Max Pacioretty, where and when, Erik Karlsson, where and when, and you know, maybe those are back burner issues, but certainly the RFAs will be the first bit of business. No RFAs have been inked since we chatted a week ago. Pacioretty's a Vegas Golden Knight, Karlsson a San Jose Shark. We also talked about Columbus and what might unfold there. What's the next domino to fall, Nostradamus?
Columbus is fascinating. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to see, you know, what Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky said to reporters today, but, you know, certainly both left a strong impression that they're starting what they believe to be their last season as members of that team. Yes. You know, the timing couldn't be worse. The Blue Jackets have sort of scratched and clawed to reach the point where they're at, where, you know, they've strung together a couple good years. I think there's reason to believe that they've got a lot of good things going on, and those are two major issues, problems, potential situations that I don't think will be easy to navigate, you know, especially with a goaltender who has a full no move. I mean, the odds of moving Bobrovsky, I would say, are long. So, you know, you're likely just playing out his final year and hope he has a great season and wish him well. And, you know, in Panarin's case, you know, certainly a potential trade. So that's on the table. You know, I think the RFAs are interesting. I just don't know where it's going yet. You know, having eight of them right now that didn't report to the first day camps, it's a lot. I mean, even if we've looked sort of relatively recently, you know, as we've mentioned, there's players every year, one or two or three last year, guys that usually miss a small amount of time because of this. But it seems as though this, you know, it's probably too soon to call it a trend, but I'm amazed in how many circumstances there's been a shrug from the teams, you know, almost as though this tactic isn't maybe quite as effective as it once was in terms of forcing a deal. And you know, just because of the numbers, I'd say the odds are a little bit better here that we're going to see some longer holdouts. And, you know, there's some decent names, you know, on this list. If it ends up being a guy like William Nylander or Darnell Nurse, Josh Morrissey, you know, players that are of real consequence to the teams that they're with now, I mean, it will become a bigger storyline because, you know, those are big pieces of what those teams want for this year.
Chris, thanks as always. Great stuff. We'll talk again next Tuesday. Enjoy the weekend.
All right. Sounds good, Ryan. Thank you.